Welcome, boys and girls, to another edition of the Brocast. I am David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network, and I am joined on this fine and festive Friday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. I'm really good. I'm out of pain for the first time in 2 months. After going to the dentist for 45 times, they found, finally, in the second x-ray, they found a very, very small crack, and I got a feeling, and I am no longer feeling pain.
Amazing.
It is. Pain-free. It is. It is. First time I've ever had a feeling. I've had, he calls my teeth virgins. So.
I suddenly have no sympathy for you and just have anger towards you.
Virgins no more.
Just the one.
But this is how it feels.
The one filling. And you're, I mean, certainly you're what, like 17 years old? That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yes. Oh. That's what I am. 17. I went one time in my 20s when I didn't go to the dentist for like, must've been 3 or 4 years. And that when I went in the dental hygienist, I told her, and I remember she's like, oh, this is going to be horrible. I mean, she was just setting me up. This is going to be brutal. It's going to be horrible. You're going to need so much. Your teeth are, blah, 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 blah. You're going to, does the x-rays, does she what? And I go, so how am I? She goes, what? I go, is there any? She goes, no, you don't have any cavities. She was so pissed.
I'm so happy for you.
She was so pissed.
At somebody,
Dave, are you implying that you've had a lot of dental work done?
Arguably the most anguished teeth of all time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had to get 2 root canals when I was like 19 years old.
Why?
No, just because my teeth rot out of my head. I don't know.
Oh. Oh. Did you suck on Diet Cokes and
no,
overly
no,
so?
No. No,
really.
Was your
whole family like that?
Not everybody, but a few of us. A few of us have got the hardcore anguish gene there.
How are the girls?
They're both okay, but they've got weird snaggle teeth, so they have to. They're both going to need like hardcore Invisalign. One of them's in it right now, but
it's a rite of passage. You're a kid today. You get braces.
But they do not. They don't get cavities, which is
that's a good
lesson.
Okay. Since I'm a virgin, I've seen the world anew.
He has seen the world anew. So let's speak on it. We got a lot to talk about today. UCLA basketball teams, plural, are both entering the NCAA tournament. The men's basketball team is playing tonight or two afternoon. You know, there needs to be a word for that. Not just
there probably
afternoon.
Isn't. There probably is in Old English. I bet like Shakespeare.
A noon or something, right?
Yeah. I'll look it up.
This afternoon. Or evening or night, depending on where you are and how you're, you know, kind of situated with the world and clocks and whatnot. The Bruins will take on UCF, the Knights of Central Florida, at 4:25 p.m. Let's just get exact, all right? 4:25 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or are we in daylight savings time? Who knows? Who can say with any certainty?
Does anybody really know what time it is?
Does anybody really know? Is there anyone alive out there?
Do I really care?
So that's that with the men's basketball team. They're playing then. We will talk about that in a moment. But we're also going to talk about the women's basketball team taking on Cal Baptist tomorrow night. That will be the first round game. It will more than likely be an absolute bloodbath. So we will talk on that briefly and then probably just skip into Monday's game against the winner of Oklahoma State and Princeton. But that's that. And then we also want to discuss the state of UCLA basketball as it pertains to high school recruiting and whether or not it is still a viable strategy for UCLA under Mick Cronin to pursue high school 5 stars.
First time we've ever talked about this.
We've never touched on this before. I'm sure my opinions on this certainly will be novel and interesting to all of you. So. Let's begin with the game today.
Yes.
UCLA takes on UCF later today. The Bruins, obviously the main storyline coming into this one is Tyler Bilodeau and to an extent Donovan Dent's health. Tyler Bilodeau left the Michigan State game with a knee injury and then did not return for the Purdue game. Donovan Dent left the Purdue game with a lower leg injury and then did not return. And then this week, essentially Dent seemed fine, per Mick Cronin early on in the week, but Tyler Bilodeau was still resting. And then as of yesterday, we heard that while Tyler Bilodeau was still listed as questionable on the injury report released to the NCAA, we've heard that he is on track to play in the basketball game this evening or afternoon, what have you.
Yes. You know, we talk about matchups, whether it's a good matchup, bad matchup. UCLA has tended to do pretty well when the opposition's best players are guards. That's generally the case with UCF. I watched, well, I fast forwarded, but let's say a game and a half. And their guards ain't bad. Riley Kugel is their leading scorer, and he's really not, he's a leading scorer, so you've got to shut him down. But it's Themis Folks, that dude, that's the one who is the engine that runs this whole team.
Likes to throw the ball to the other team, though.
Oh, damn. I saw a game where I think he committed more turnovers than had assists.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does that. I like matching up against him. And I especially like it because you've got the guy, Sky Clark, who's a good defender. But then also, you know, you got the guy coming off the bench, and you can do a lot of stuff with Eric Freeney. I mean, you could tag team Folks. You could put him on Google. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do here. So I like that from that standpoint. Their front line. Did you see like what happened to John Bull?
Yeah. So John Bull, the 7'2" center for UCF, he collapsed on the floor.
Weird. Scary.
Against Arizona in the Big 12 tournament, and had to be helped off the floor. He's not listed on the injury report. My assumption is he's fine. Just kind of maybe an exhaustion thing or I don't know. Could be just not drinking enough water or something, but very scary.
Yeah. He when he does play, I mean, he's not a big scorer, but he alters the game because he's 7'2" and, you know, he's
weird. You think guys who are like over like true over 7 feet tall, you think they have an impact on the game just by being seven, like say two or in some cases 7'3"?
Maybe.
You think those guys just by virtue of their size and like length, like the length of their arms and things and like what they can do defensively or rebounding or just altering shots around the hoop, you think that has an impact on basketball?
No, sometimes I can't tell if you're being sarcastic. He does change the game.
He's 7'2".
Similar to other 7 foot plus people.
Perhaps even some guys who are 7'3", similar to them.
No, that's where the line's drawn. So this, it'll be interesting. We've been making out a lot, and I understand about the health of Donovan Dent and Bilodeau and their availability and how good they'll be in this game. I think we can say pretty confident Donovan Dent will be Donovan Dent. I don't think he'll be hampered at all. If there's between the two of them who could be, it would be Bilodeau.
Yes,
I believe. I think he'll play. Whether he's 100% is the question. But you know, I don't think scoring is UCLA's problem. And the guys that are hard to match up with Central Florida are their perimeter guys. So I still see this as a good matchup for UCLA, Dave.
I would say basically it comes down to this. If UCLA doesn't shoot really well, it becomes a problem because UCF is a pretty good rebounding team. They're not great. They're not elite by any stretch of the imagination, but they are pretty good. And if UCLA gives them a lot of misses to rebound, it could end up closer than it should be. And potentially with UCF winning, UCF is a pretty weak 10 seed. They're probably the weakest of the 10 seeds this time around. If you go by the KenPom ratings, like they probably shouldn't have been in the field. They're not like structured like a typical 10 seed. But I think the Big 12, we'll see how it shakes out, I guess, in terms of the tournament, but it's kind of low sample size. The Big 12 appears to me as if it was fairly overrated in the middle stretches of the league for purposes of the NCAA tournament. And UCF, I mean, this isn't some great team. And they also kind of limped to the finish here. They've lost 7 of their last 11. They got absolutely smoked by Arizona in the Big 12 conference tournament. Had a bad loss to West Virginia in the last game of the regular season. Well, it wasn't a bad loss. I guess it was quad one, but West Virginia is not very good. Basically, UCLA needs to play roughly to its averages offensively, and I think it'll be fine. It's if they have a really subpar game for just variance reasons where they're shooting poorly, that this one becomes a lot closer than it should be.
And then, Dave, if it comes down to coaching at all, we got our old friend.
Hey, it's
we got
the great our old Johnny Dawkins, baby.
Wow. Some of the most kind of innocuous years ever at Stanford.
He is.
How many years was he there? Like 7 or 8 years?
You know how in like.
That was great.
Sports on the field, there's this idea of the replacement level player.
Right? Yeah.
Johnny Dawkins is replacement level coach. Like, this will be a basketball team that does not embarrass itself on the floor. That is all it will be. And it's basically whether or not they have a three-point shooter that year, whether they maybe make the tournament or don't. But they are not going to be good. They're not going to be horrible. They're going to be replacement level. UCF, under him, has been a replacement level basketball program. Stanford, under him, replacement level basketball program.
So he's a replacement level coach.
Yes, he is like he's like a sim coach. Like, he is literally just the like a non-player character who is coaching a basketball team.
Let's just talk a little bit about the tournament yesterday. How'd you do in your bracket?
Horribly. I'm
horrible. I'm out. I think I'm out.
I had Wisconsin going to the Final Four, dude.
What was I thinking with Wisconsin?
I don't know. I watched them in the Big Ten tournament. I'm like, oh, maybe. And then nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Is the Big Ten overrated, Dave?
Maybe it was. I had McNeese in the Sweet 16. They're out.
And you know, five. So I do it with my whole family. We have a competition. And I feel like if I really thought about it, because, I mean, this is my job, I'd be cheating a little. So I do it really fast. But then as soon as I started watching Ohio State TCU, I went, oh, TCU is going to win this game. I mean, it's better coaching. And I went, what did I do in my bracket? I went for Ohio State. I'm an idiot, complete idiot. So, yeah, I mean, I it was really fun. I got my heart broken by Siena.
That was sad to watch.
Damn.
Sad to watch. The missing the like three dunks in like three plays was really tough to watch.
I don't think I've ever seen all five starters play through like until like the last 5 minutes of the game.
That was nuts.
They clearly got tired. If they had not been tired and had their legs shooting late in that game,
they might win. Yeah.
They might have won.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah. How about BYU? You know, a big topic of discussion. And this will lead right into the recruiting.
Yeah, we're not doing that yet. We're going to women's basketball.
First. Okay, let's do women's basketball. Okay, I was trying to give us a segue.
No, you were giving us, and is it too early to segue out of the UCF game? People are interested in this.
Okay.
Where are we on this?
Okay, let's talk
more.
Things
are falling apart. Dogs and cats living together.
That's one of the best lines, and I know he improvised that line.
No, it's fine. We can actually go, because I actually have very little left to say about the UCF game.
No. I mean, let's just finish this off. I mean,
let's finish it off.
Yeah, let's finish it off. Their defense, and if you want to read a great preview, our friend Rob Carpentier wrote a great preview. He's really in his game when we get into the NCAA tournament. Their defense is based on Bull, and he makes the point that even when they don't have Bull, they play Bull-like defense where they try to funnel drivers into the lane. I don't see the ability to stay in front of Dent. UCLA's offense is so good at penetrating, kicking out, finding shooters. Bilodeau doesn't have to do much, just catch and shoot, and he's effective. I mean, do we really need him to move that much to still get 16 points? I don't think so. So, I think you're right. I'd be stunned if they didn't win this game. It could just be one of those games where they have a really bad shooting night, and that's probably about it for me.
Yeah, agreed.
Rebounds are an issue. That could be that, but I mean, UCLA's beaten everyone who have out rebounded them. So I think it comes down to if they have a bad shooting night, that could make this tight.
Yep. The UCLA women, Tracy, take on the great Cal Baptist. I say great because I know nothing about them. Except that they're supposed to lose by 51.5 points in this game.
I'd take the over.
Yeah, I could see UCLA winning. Well, they might want to take it easy a little bit.
And if they take it easy, they'll still win by 65.
Good point. The Torvik line is actually 45.3.
Oh, I want to bet Bart. Come on, yeah. Bart, put your money where your data is.
Yeah, let's go, Bart.
I love his name, Bart Torvik.
It's a great name. It's a great name. Oklahoma State and Princeton are the next option after that. So for UCLA to lose to either of those teams would be losing to Cal Baptist. I'm just going to say this, and I know you. Some of you will think I'm jinxing. Losing to Cal Baptist is actually impossible. Like, they actually couldn't do it. Even if they were maybe trying, like even if all of them were shaving points, they probably couldn't do it. Losing to one of Oklahoma State and Princeton would be one of the biggest upsets in women's basketball history. Like, these two teams also should have very little chance, borderline none, to beat UCLA.
So many things would have to go wrong.
Yes.
It would have to be that Lauren Betts somehow just lost her depth perception and literally can't make a lay-in.
Correct.
It would have to be that. They could have a bad shooting night, a lot of turnovers, but they would still win as long as Lauren Betts can just lay the ball in.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's just like contextualizing, and it's a different, for those who aren't familiar, who haven't paid attention, it's a different format to an extent than the men's tournament where it's all neutral sites. UCLA plays its first two games at home. So these are two home games, one against Cal Baptist, which again, UCLA should win that one by about 90 if they actually went full bore. And then one against a mid-tier team, either Oklahoma State or Princeton. Those teams UCLA has largely annihilated this year, anybody in the mid-tier of women's college basketball. So the first real game for the Bruins, I mean, is it Ole Miss, Minnesota, the winner of that group? I don't know. I mean, the first real game might not be until they play the other side of this bracket, whether that's LSU or whatnot. So anyway, it's going to be probably two fairly routine games to start this thing out. And the main goal will just be to emerge healthy. And not have any, you know, kind of hiccups.
Yeah, Lauren Betts should play 12 minutes in this game.
Half the game at most in each of these. Like, you want to be able to, you know, save your legs, not go too crazy. The cool thing is just two games in a weekend, and they're used to doing a lot of that. But you don't want to go too nuts in this stage. And you really don't want to risk injury in these two games.
And if you have not seen them play, whether they win a national championship or not, you know, if they get upset in an early round or they lose to UConn in the final, this is, I'd say a once in at least a couple of decades talented team for UCLA women's basketball. I mean, we haven't seen anything this talented in decades, and we might not soon. You may, as a Bruin fan, owe it to yourself to get out this weekend just to go see them in person. I mean, because this is a phenomenal team. They really are well constructed. They play so well together because there, you know, there's so many seniors on this team that know how to play, and they know how to play well. They play unselfishly. They know they're so smart. Our big challenge to them, if you remember, was to cut down on their turnovers this year, and they've done that. I mean, they've just continued to get better, which is crazy. So you owe it to yourself to go out and at least watch them. I'm going to get ahead of myself and say Saturday and Monday.
Yes. Oh, you're getting – wow.
Wow,
you're,
I know.
You're predicting the win over Cal Baptist.
There's the headline right there
for
this podcast.
Good God. So anyway, this obviously the men's have a much tougher road. Once they get past UCF, it's going to be UConn, the two seed, and you know UConn's going to be favored. We'll get into that matchup over the weekend if they end up getting past UCF. There are some reasons to hope for UCLA, but that's going to be a tough game. The women's team does not have a really tough game until you get to the second weekend. Again, if they lost on Monday, it would be a very big upset to whoever it ends up being, Oklahoma State or Princeton.
There you go, Dave.
All right.
Are we done?
Oh, are we done? Are we done talking about, okay. 21 minutes. We're in, we're done. Okay. Cool. Good talk. Yeah, we got to talk. Tracy decided to, throw some chum in the waters. He decided to get the, piranhas circling the boat. They're out for blood. By posting a little thing about UCLA high school basketball recruiting and how maybe five stars are not the way for Mick Cronin and UCLA.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's just take a look real quick, because I think this might be, aside from OT MLB 2026, this might be the most posted in thread of our time here at On Three.
No, I think there's one more.
No, there was one Adai Mara thread that went over.
The Adai Mara was number one.
Right now we're at 125. 125 replies since 2:04 yesterday afternoon.
Dave, throw in Adai, just with you, make a post that says more on Adai Mara and then just a dot, dot, dot. See if we can beat it just on that.
I want your saltiest opinion on Adai Mara right now.
Oh, God.
Tracy posted this little thread.
Just this little one.
A little thread. It's drawn a lot of, I think, a lot of really interesting opinion.
You know what? Let's say that, Dave. I'm serious. I'm very, very proud of everyone, because everyone's very passionate about this, and that's why you're on the site, because you're passionately crazy.
Like us. It's
but,
okay.
Yeah, but it's been very balanced, and I would say generally very smartly opinionated, like not to usually Dave and I read and we'll go, well, that's just out there. I mean, everything was within the realm of acceptability that makes sense. So this is a well-reasoned thread, and we really appreciate it, guys.
And I would say there's a lot of opinions in there. I'm going to distill a few of them. One is UCLA can't really, or UCLA will have a hard time being elite if it can't or won't recruit five-star high school athletes. I would say that's kind of a through line for a lot of people.
Should we do this one thing at a time, or you're going to distill?
Yeah, why don't we do it one thing at a time? Because that's kind of the first one that I saw that was like, okay, this is something that I think a lot of people are on board with. And I actually have a nuanced opinion on this one, but I would like to hear your response to that idea first.
That recruiting should be based at least a bit on bringing in one and done type high schoolers.
If your goal is having an elite program.
So a few years ago, I speculated about it, you know, going into the NIL era, and now we have enough data. There are enough results that if you look in the NCAA tournament and teams that have done well, you do not need a one and doneer by any stretch. Do some of them really help some teams? We're actually this year, we're seeing it. I'd say more so this year than in any recent year, with Arizona. And I almost would have been able to dispel this with Duke, but so
Boozer was the best player on the floor for Duke.
Damn.
He looks like he looks like Carlos. Like, he's just bodying dudes, and like,
he is.
He's got the same kind of big butt situation where he's just booming guys out of the way.
And I know this is going to disappoint you because you all want to hate Duke, but he's a really nice kid too.
Yeah.
He really is. It's so sad. But we've seen it enough. A lot of teams get their, and I'm calling them one and done now instead of five star, because someone brought up a point. And I answered, it's not about the rating as much. It's about the attitude of the player, of the high school recruit, and one and done kind of captures it more. It's the player, his family, his entourage, his agents, who are absolutely convinced he's one and done. Are those guys worth it? Generally, no, they're not. And it's hard to impress this upon you all because you don't live it. But if I could take a group of you and go let you, I don't know where I'd place you, in an agent's office, or even just in sitting here with in my office, and I put you on speaker a few times, or maybe in Max Feldman's office, that would probably do it. And you'd understand what it is to recruit those kind of players, those kind of recruits. It's beyond nuts. And I'm not disparaging the coach that does it. When I was using the term selling your soul, somehow some of these coaches have been able to pull this off and still have a decent opinion of themselves. At one point, if you are going after a one and done, and a guy who's like legit, like Christian Collins. So I was a Christian Collins fan. I wanted UCLA to recruit him. I always thought he would start for UCLA if he was a freshman, but I had to project him a little. I've watched him in game. He has continued to get better. So someone like him, 6'8", 6'9", long, athletic, skills getting better. That is a clear one and done candidate. That kid. There are other guys who are, you know, 6'2 point guards who are not one and, who think they are, but they're not. But this legitimate, like, there are legitimate one and done. To be involved in those kind of typical recruitments, you can't even imagine. And it used to be they would make demands illegally. Now that it's not illegal, the demands are out of control. In the last couple of weeks, with one and dones, I've heard NIL beyond what you could ever imagine, that would make them like $4 to $5 million, not to Bantam money, but still not worth it, because of the impact they'll have as a freshman, most likely. Demanding that the NIL collective buy their family a house, getting in relatives into school that have no grades. I mean, like, I can say it. I've heard 2 years removed from graduated from high school, and I don't think they're in a JC and they want them admitted into school. I mean, some of the demands are, and then the go-to, I want to start. And now the new one that's coming on, and I don't want to practice every day. I want to determine what days I practice. That's the new one that I'm hearing a lot now. So this is...
Well, certainly nobody could agree to that.
Yeah, no, but people are. And that's the thing. You could say, as a fan, you want UCLA to recruit one and dones. I get it too. And it's mostly, you know, all those old-timey recruitniks who like that, but you're putting your head in the sand about where this has gone now and where it is now. Some coaches are getting it done, and good on them. I mean, I respect that they could find the one and done that they can recruit and not feel horrible about themselves and making the concessions, and that those one and dones were worth it. If the coaches who were doing that are doing exceptional jobs in recruiting. So there's that. But see, even the last post I put up, Dave, it's not even, I did throw chum in the water about the five-star because we've talked about the one and done five-star. It really isn't about that with Mick Cronin. I mean, what it comes down to right now, it's really, really simple. I think, he's reduced his talent recruiting pool just by who he is. I mean, less and less recruits want to play for him. He's got a more shallow recruiting pool there. But even with that, he still has a pathway towards success at UCLA. Has it gotten narrower? Probably. But he just needs to recruit the type of players that do well being coached by him. And those are athletes, defenders, rebounders, in general, tough guys, physical, mental, and guys who work hard. And then the program has to do a good job of evaluating prospects to find the guys who can play for them, who might are going to overachieve given their NIL or just, hell, live up to their NIL. If he does those two things well, you don't need one and doneers. He will compete in college basketball at a high level.
Here's my issue with that.
Just to finish it off, the problem is he hasn't done that.
That's the issue with it.
Since 2023, he has not done this well.
He hasn't found
the guys that play in his system well, and he hasn't done a good job of evaluating. And that's where it is.
This is the problem, because this pathway for Mick Cronin, this has been literally what I have been saying they should be doing since the transfer portal started. It's, yeah, you can get on the hamster wheel, which we talked about literally 4 years ago when this was all beginning, and you can just consistently try to reload with transfers every single season. But what do we know about Mick Cronin? He does best as a developmental head coach. You can't develop five stars because they're going to be gone. You can't develop transfers because they're going to be gone. Who can you develop? High school four stars. You can develop tough guys that you can recruit from the LA area or from nationally who are in that mold. And look, you can talk about Brandon Williams and Eric Freeney and say, well, they're end of the bench guys who probably shouldn't play on a really good UCLA team. But we are seeing incremental improvement for them every single year, to the point where, as redshirt seniors in 2 years, you might be able to say, okay, they can be your fifth and sixth guys, maybe. Who knows? But you do that with those sorts of guys, and then you get some top 60-ish guys who can be your front-of-the-line guys. But the main thing is you have to evaluate really well, and you have to be patient. And what we've seen over the last 3 years of UCLA basketball is, first, distinct lack of patience. You know, there was some definite throwing baby out with the bathwater with both the Euro year and the year after that. Two, the evaluations have been poor. And it's just, that's not something you just kind of, oh, okay, well, you need to evaluate better. I mean, they're going to do some front office things. Max Feldman is there now, and that's going to help, and they're probably going to add some front office pieces. But a lot of this is still going to be, you know, Mick Cronin. You know, if a trainer calls you up and says, hey, I've got a guy or whatever after the season, being able to say, no, we've got to really evaluate and kind of, you know, dig into this a little bit more. And I just think timing is tough with the way they do it now, with the way the transfer portal is, because you're coming in after the season and immediately shifting gears into the transfer portal. And it's, I think some decisions get made that are just kind of like responsive to what went wrong this year and not prescriptive for how the next 2 to 3 years are going to shape out.
Responsive and you're exhausted.
Yeah. And it's just they're decisions made out of impatience. And I think, yeah, the formula for Mick Cronin's program has always been obvious. And the great thing was that he stumbled on it early, and it was immediate and obvious when he had Jaime Jaquez, Tiger Campbell, Johnny Juzang, all these guys, not a single one of them a five-star. Cody Riley, all of these guys were, you know, those kind of developmental players that he could kind of pour himself into and then have the return of their immediate success and their immediate growth. I don't even know if it was deviation from that necessarily, or just impatience with this desire to reload constantly. And this constant refrain of you get old and you stay old. Okay. But that's not you. That's not UCLA under you. I mean, that's Duke or somebody else. That's not you. You are developmental guy. We were able to see this from the very beginning. Like from the very beginning, any newcomer to the program took like 2 to 3 months to acclimate. Starting with that first year where they were all newcomers to the program, they didn't start playing well until mid-January. And then every year after, when they brought in a new player, it took them forever to start playing Mick Cronin basketball the way he wanted.
Think about mid-January. That would have been great this year.
Well, that's the thing. And it's just like I'm sort of baffled by, and this is where it just comes down to, I think it's the this self-evaluation thing, this introspection that gets denigrated in some circles these days, but introspection is super important because then you know who you are, you know what you're about, and you know what works for you. And
it's just, self-scouting.
That's all it is, but you got to do it.
I think a lot of it too, Dave, and I'm going to talk generally about coaches. When they've had a level of success, and UCLA contributes to this because now you think you've made it. You're at the place where you want to be. You start to believe that you're such a good coach that you can coach anyone to be good. And especially if you're a defensive-minded coach, you can take an offensive guy and make him a good defender. We've seen this happen before. It's just not the case. You need to find guys who are athletes, who have a penchant for defending, have all the tools to defend, and then you can teach them to be really good defenders. Very rarely, Dave, try to think of one guy who we knew was really good offensive player that miraculously became a great defender. I can't think of one. I mean, it just doesn't exist. So it's a little bit of hubris, I think. It's just really, like you're saying, it's self-scouting. It's realizing who you are. It's realizing what your strengths are. And it's getting back to that. And then the real key is evaluating to that formula and doing a great job of evaluating. And I think you're right. The timing of the transfer portal really isn't conducive.
It sucks for Mick Cronin specifically.
Yeah.
Because I think if he had a month to decompress, I think there'd be a lot.
I think so too.
I think there would be better decisions being made, but it's the reality. And for him, like, it's just, you've got to have patience. You have to have patience with your system, but also you got to have confidence in your system. Like, you have to have confidence that like what you were able to do in your first few years, like the constant refrain of, well, you need to make shots. Yeah. But you know what? It's basketball. And so somebody's going to be making shots. Like you don't play basketball and score 15. You're always scoring more than 60, right? Like it's not, yeah, you ideally have a Tyler Bilodeau who can, you know, make shots from literally everywhere on the floor. But if you don't, and instead you have a really good defender at the four who's like an elite athlete, you're also going to win a lot of games. You're going to win them in a different way. You might even win more. And that's not a denigration of Tyler Bilodeau. It's just the structure of who you are as a coach and who you are as a teacher and what your programs should look like. I'm trying to, like, if this is like a UCLA specific phenomenon or if it's a general pervasive thing, but like these guys who are leopards who try to change their spots, it's happened now twice. And it's just like, no, you are a thing like that. And that thing is really good. Like you have this thing.
Really good. It went to three Final Fours.
Because the thing is, it's not even just defense. You have this like preternatural superpower where you can teach guys to not turn the ball over. Like they stop turning the ball over. And you know what one of the like major building blocks of having a good offense is in modern college basketball? Don't turn the damn ball over. Because if you don't do that, as I was saying, somebody's going to make a shot most of the time. Yeah. Does Mick Cronin have offensive droughts? Sure. Do they also have periods where they hold a team scoreless for 7.5 minutes? Also true.
And that's
beautiful. I'll take that.
Yeah.
And okay, is there maybe some... if you want to get into a really, really fine-tuned argument where there is some limited upside, like not at the Final Four level, but limited championship upside with that style of basketball, where it does take a perfect confluence of circumstances to maybe win a title with that group, with that style of basketball, fine. I'm not willing to concede one way or the other, but I'm willing to say, fine, maybe that's true. But if the baseline is a lot higher, which is if you're running that style of basketball with really good developmental four stars that you are evaluating well, and then you are teaching them to play defense, not turn the ball over, and they're good athletes, your baseline is really high. And so you're giving yourself as many bites at the apple as possible. Whereas if you're trying to constantly recruit one and dones, and you're trying to constantly nail the transfer portal for this elite guy, you're going to have major oscillation. There's going to be major variance in performance unless you have $20 million to do it.
And one of Cronin's strengths, which plays right into what you've always advocated about developing, four-star high schoolers, people come into his program, and I mean, it's practically Stockholm syndrome. He can't get rid of them. They all want to stay. I mean, even if they don't play that much, I mean,
everything in his program, everything about it points to that strategy.
There's only been one guy that he brought in that really wanted to willingly leave on his own. He shall be unknown.
How tall was he again?
Everyone else, if they left, I would even argue
that guy didn't willingly really want to leave.
Yeah, but there were outside forces that might have precipitated them.
That's an argument for another day.
I don't even know if it's
that might be an argument for somebody to sit us down.
What it would be like, I put this on the forum. If anyone wants to sponsor Bruin Report Online, we can, like, we'll call it like Tuna Sandwich, Bruin Report Online.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a good, Dave and I will, we'll go out and have drinks, dinner a few times a month and just spill the tea, tell you everything. And I'm telling you, Dave, how much are we sitting on? 75% of everything we know, probably.
There's some stuff we just can't report.
But we'll tell you if you want to sponsor Bruno Portland. So it's really, it is a formula that you can see working. He could get those high school guys. He just has to evaluate the high school guys well. They come in for whatever reason, they don't want to leave. So you got that part down. Evaluating transfers, hit and miss, I'd say. I don't know. Dave, how would you judge the I would say probably, if you really add them all up, probably the misses might outweigh the hits.
In the transfer portal?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard because you're getting a different type of thing when you go into the transfer portal, because you're getting somebody who's already been influenced by another college program. You're getting somebody who's already been taught by somebody different. And so I do think there's a little bit more unlearning and unpacking, and what's realistic for how much you're going to try to break a guy down versus utilize what he already has.
And along those same lines, what we're talking about is that you want to bring in guys that are going to play to your style. You can bring in a freshman four-star and teach, and he's got athleticism, and you can teach him how to play defense. If a guy's already learned some really bad habits playing 2, 3, 4 years at another program, and he's not a great defender, you're not teaching him to be a good defender.
Well, and Kobe Johnson was a decent defender in a certain style of defense. He was a high-risk defender, a lot of steals and everything. He wasn't really a Cronin defender. Cronin adapted him fairly enough to that style by the end of the year-ish. But that is, you get Kobe Johnson as a high school senior, you get him into the program as a freshman. Kobe Johnson might have been an obvious first round NBA player and like a real talent and the whole thing. It's just, he developed a lot of habits from Andy Enfield.
But still, you're making an example of a guy who was a good defender who came to UCLA and was a good defender. You cannot take a bad defender and make him a good defender if he's been in a program for 3 years.
And he's one of the transfer success stories. And then you've got guys like Eric Daly and Tyler Bilodeau, which I'm not willing to call them like they're not misses by any stretch of the imagination. Tyler Bilodeau is the leading scorer and he's been an elite scorer. Eric Daly has had moments. He's flashed, obviously, the last week or so. Maybe he can come together here at the end of the year. But my point with those two guys is, are they or were they ever real fits for an elite Mick Cronin program? And that's the part where it's just like, we're arguing in negation. It's impossible to say with any certainty. But my general sense of the thing is they do not fit the Cronin like kind of archetype for those positions. They're not super athletes. They're not super great rebounders. And so what are you getting out of them? You're getting out of them a different thing, which is this offensive prowess. But does that cut the mustard for this program breaking through to another level? And that's the part where this is where it goes back to the transfer portal period. I think it's immediately after the season creates this responsive element where you're just kind of like trying to fix whatever was broken with last year's team. And you're not thinking about, okay, well, what do the next 2 to 3 years look like? How do I build this back to a sustainable national title contending program or sustainable Final Four contending program, or at the very least a sustainable Big Ten contending program? And that's just where I think there's just been a real limited, it's been a laser focus on what's next, what's this next season, and how is it going to fix whatever was wrong with this last year's team? And it ends up being this kind of whack-a-mole thing. Plus whack-a-mole.
That's how coaches always are. They always are immediate reaction to their last, what they just did. If it's something that a player who wasn't good, they'll go get the opposite. If it was a player who was really good, they're going to try to find that same player.
And it's true, not even just with coaches. I mean, we talk about it all the time with ADs, yes, where they're hiring whatever the opposite of the last guy was.
Yeah.
Human response.
When it comes to like Tyler Bilodeau, Tyler, doing these evaluations, here's the big lesson too. You can't do them in a vacuum of just one guy. You've got to take it in the context of your roster. You can bring in a scorer, let's say a transfer scorer, who's a high-end scorer and not a great defender. If he's surrounded with four great defenders, then you're good. Bringing in Eric Daly and Tyler Bilodeau, two not great defenders together, looking back, that was the problem.
Well, it's free agency, so we're kind of talking bluntly about this stuff in a way that we wouldn't typically when but it is free agency, so just retaining both of them this past offseason is also another move where it's like, okay, and yes, we can talk about the price and all that kind of stuff, and you know, that did they get deals on both guys? Sure. But you're utilizing two roster spots for starters for guys who don't fit alongside each other at the three and the four. And it took until the end of the year for them to switch them to the four and the five, which is a much better fit, but it does then create defensive issues at the five particularly. And it creates rebounding issues because, you know, Bilodeau is not a good rebounder and Daly is, when he puts his mind to it, he can be fine. He's not great. And you've got those two guys as your four and your five.
To me, it comes down to when in any version of five guys on the court, you need at least three good defenders in a Mick Cronin program, if not four. If you look at what they were going to put on the court this year, there was one good defender.
Sky Clark.
You can't win that way. You just can't win that way in a Mick Cronin system and program. I mean, and Cronin has recognized it, and I recognize it and wrote about it. You bring in a guy who's starting to step up and play well, and he's a good defender in Eric Freeney. The difference has been phenomenal. When Sky Clark goes out, Eric Freeney comes in, and now you have another good defender. I mean, just one guy. If you had a team of four good defenders among the five and the guy who wasn't was like a big time scorer, that's where you need to, that's what he needs to be shooting for, in my opinion. And that needs to be everyone's mindset. All the bros, God bless you, completely appreciate it, out there looking for potential transfers. You got to look at how they fit within this program. Please first look at athleticism and rebounding. If you're going after a big-time And defending. If you see a guy who's a really big scorer, you gotta know you can only take him if you bring in four other guys who could defend. So there's a big asterisk for that guy. There's just so many aspects of that. You know, someone was watching the Punch Kid from TCO and talking a lot about him on the forum. I like him. I think he's an effective player. He's a 6'7" post player. Who's just a decent rebounder. He rebounded really well yesterday, but I mean, he's just decent. Would he fit in Cronin's system where you need a great defender? I don't think he would. So you just got to think about how this fits. And it's critical that the program starts thinking how they fit. If we start hearing all the guys that they're thinking about that are transfer prospects and they're all scorers, that's not a good indication. And I will tell you this, you can probably expect them to look like we just said, coaches and humans all try to correct what they just was just a problem or recreate what was just a strength. I would bet they will be going after Tyler Bilodeau types in the portal.
So there you go.
So there you go. Seriously,
that's my opinion. Sorry, I wasn't meaning to transition us to the end of the show. That was just my opinion on going into the portal to try to attract Tyler Bilodeau types.
Yeah. It's going to be exciting. I mean, right now with where it is in UCLA's program, transfer portals, I mean, I wrote that as part of the story, but I wasn't really being facetious. It's really exciting to me, the transfer portal. It's so much fun. It's 2 weeks and probably a few weeks after of intense recruiting. And all you're doing is trying these guys on for size and saying, God, could you see him in a UCLA uniform? How would he be playing for Cronin?
So Tracy, so, just
I think
so
it's exciting,
knows,
Dave.
I'm going to take everyone behind the curtain here because Tracy calls me during the NCAA tournament every year. And he's like, or he texts me. And it's like, have you seen this guy from this team? And I'm like, yeah, I watched the game. No, but like, what kind of fit could he be for? And I'm like, I couldn't possibly.
I love the way you portray me.
I couldn't possibly.
Like a 14-year-old.
Like a 14-year-old.
Have you seen the new Star Wars movie, Dave?
You do get excited about it. But I'm sitting there and I'm like, I couldn't possibly start caring about this until these guys enter the net transfer portal. Couldn't.
Oh, you're just Mr. Poo-poo on recruiting anyway. You're show me when they're really good. And
well,
yeah.
So my thing is, like, it's hard to know because a guy like Eric Daly, I actually watched at Oklahoma State, and I would have described him then, I think I did describe him then, as a pretty good power athlete. He thickened up pretty soon after Oklahoma State, where he suddenly had lost a good deal of his foot speed and almost all of his quickness. And that happened between his freshman and sophomore years. And it's just like... Okay, well, I guess that's the way that happened. The dude played point guard at different points for Oklahoma State. Like he played literally every position on the floor, sometimes a one, sometimes a five. And so you're looking at that and you're like, wow, okay, that guy can fill a lot of different roles. And then things changed for him basically in a single offseason.
Eric Daly is a complete enigma to me because I have to admit, I think Eric Daly is a good kid who tries hard and works hard. We've seen him when he's good. Mid last season, he was the best player on the damn team, man. And then there are games this year, even though he's playing out of position and he's attempting to do things that he shouldn't, he still has been a force at times. But then miraculously, there are times when he just disappears, and that is so head scratching. I don't think anyone gets that.
No. But I guess that's my, like, it's just, there's a lot of a guy looks good in a particular team or a particular system, and then he gets him at Cronin and it's a different deal.
Yeah.
Just a different deal. Like I would have thought Miles Johnson out of Rutgers was the best fit for Mick Cronin of any like player who's come through the transfer portal. And then it was, one of those very strange things where like Cody Riley was still playing ahead of him, despite Miles Johnson being a super elite rebounder and shot blocker.
Well, here's the element. We talk about what's a fit for Mick Cronin. and I can say this being close to the program, you got to be a little bit of a asshole. I mean, you got to be a tough ass. You do. I think Johnson was a really nice kid. Being, and not that you can't be a nice person and be a good player for Cronin. You've just got to be a guy who's like, if this is the Roman Empire and this is the army, it's the guys who are the ass kickers up front who are killing everyone and don't care. It's those guys. It's not the guys behind who are worried that, you know, they might die, which would have been me. I got to admit. It's the guys.
I would have operated a sling. I would have been one of the slingers in the back row.
In the back row.
Yeah, just throwing some rocks at people.
Yeah. you need that element. There has to be that element. So Miles Johnson, you gotta, okay, athlete, defender, tough, kind of an asshole. That's on the list too. You got to be that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, here's the most important thing. And I want to leave with this because we've gotten kind of sidetracked into negative town, and I wanted to leave on positive town. UCLA, the men's team, has been playing really, really well of late. Really well. If Tyler Bilodeau is relatively healthy and Donovan Dent is healthy, they should beat UCF. And then I would say they've got a pretty decent chance of beating UConn. UConn's not great.
And let's give the credit where it should be. So Donovan Dent, you know, iffy up and down kind of season. Last 3 weeks,
last seven games, 78 assists and 6 turnovers.
That's insane. We are experiencing watching something that cannot ever happen.
And it's ever. Been 4 turnovers in the last like 2 games. Before that, it was 2 in 5 games.
And that is coaching. That is, you got to give Mick Cronin a lot of credit for coaching him to this point, and give Dent a lot of credit for being coached and being able to get here. We were hoping it would be January, but it was March. let's say February when it kicked in. Eric Freeney, I mean, a month and a half ago, you were thinking, should he return? Should they cut him? I think we all kind of want Eric Freeney to come back for his redshirt sophomore year next year.
Yeah.
As just a guy off the bench and what he can bring. That's development. That's coaching. Brandon Williams has been kind of key off the bench too.
Yep.
I mean, the fact that with Xavier Booker faltering and they're going more towards a 5-out offense with Bilodeau, I mean, they are where they are right now. To a lot of extent, give all the players credit, but it has been coaching.
Oh, yeah.
Brought him to this point.
Yeah. I mean, when you see a guy like Dent go to basically 0 turnovers, that's, again, it's what we talked about. They're just coaching these guys to not turn the ball over is one of Mick Cronin's best attributes as a coach.
Yeah.
So I think it should be a fun weekend. And saying that, they could absolutely lose at 425 today. But I think it should be a fun weekend, and it'll be an enjoyable weekend of basketball for all of you, even if it's just watching women's basketball absolutely murder stomp 2 teams.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Go to Pauly and witness that firsthand.
Yes. All right. For Tracy Pearson, I am David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network, and we will talk to you again next time.
We'll see y'all.